Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Sheldon Silver in hell. New York politics in purgatory, day two. Now, since the media keep using the term three men in a room when talking about Sheldon Silver, and most people don't know what that means, we made a one-minute movie to explain it. It's kind of in the style of a diorama you might have made in elementary school, yes. And thanks to my producer Alana's advanced diorama-making abilities, she must have been an A student in third grade. This one-minute movie is Oscar material. Well, maybe it's Oscar the Grouch material. But you can see the Brian Lehrer Show, Three Men in the Room movie, one-minute movie at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, also now showing on our Twitter and Facebook feeds. And it may help you follow along this morning as we unpack what this latest corruption scandal means for our so-called leaders and for us regular non-politician New Yorkers with one of the most regular New Yorkers I know, Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the Daily News. Hi, Ken. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be here.
You know, I want to go over the basic charges against Silver again today because there's actually a fine line here that I wonder if the U.S. attorney will have a hard time turning into a conviction. It's the difference between a law firm paying Silver a referral fee or paying him a bribe for bringing in new business. Is that the essence of this case?
Yeah, that is going to be the essence of this case. And if you're doing an honest service kind of a thing, in the old days, you just had to prove, almost like the appearance of the problem. But the U.S. Supreme Court threw that out. So in a way, now they have to prove quid pro quo. They have to prove that there was a benefit to the person. And that's what Preet Bharara is claiming.
Now, we're not lawyers, so maybe we have some lawyers in the audience who want to call in and give us your take on that Supreme Court ruling and, in general, where the line is between a referral fee and a bribe. Attorneys, lawyers, counselors, whatever you want to call yourselves, what is your understanding of where the line is under the law? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9696. And so, Ken, do you have legal sources telling you this seems like a clear-cut case or not?
I've had different things. I've had some people say it's going to be tough to prove, but I've had other people tell me that it's a slam dunk. So there you have the legal field for you.
Right. So it's an adversarial field, right, by definition. And so I guess people are going to line up on one side or the other. Of course, usually the adversarial nature of it is based on the interest of those parties involved, but I guess still people may have different perceptions. So let's pick apart the two cases a little bit. We have asbestos disease cases where there may have been this quid pro quo and property tax cases. You want to explain the asbestos part a little more?
Yeah, well, he apparently was in part working with a doctor over at Columbia who would refer asbestos cases to him, including those from 9/11 related asbestos cases, and then to Weitz and Luxembourg. This is the firm that Silver for years has been of counsel to. For years has been questioned what he did for that money. In the last year, he reported having between $650,000 and $750,000 in legal income from Weitz and Luxembourg and others. Most of that came from Weitz and Luxembourg. It's a major, major firm. And the question has always been, what did he do for the money? Well, according to Preet Bharara, he had basically a setup where people were told to send their cases to him, and they got paid in return, and he got money off the top.
They got paid in return. Who got paid in return? The lawyers?
A doctor got $500,000, according to Preet Bharara, doctor who from Columbia University who had been referring cases to Weitz and Luxembourg.
And what about the property tax part, which may have less dollar value as an alleged bribe, but might be more revealing about the way corporations use government to steal from the public?
Yeah, I know the shakedown of, supposedly it was a shakedown of real estate, powerful real estate developers who were told by the speaker they should use this little firm. And in return, the Speaker is in charge of a lot of allowing and blocking a lot of bills that that matter to the interests, to the special interests.
Since companies regularly give a lot of money to politicians for their campaigns or spend independently on the campaigns that they support, why is this transaction allegedly illegal and a lot of other lining their pockets is not?
Political donations are freedom of speech, and they're not being necessarily shaken down. We'll give you X for Y. The Speaker was using his specific office, according to the prosecutor, to get these people to go get these interests who have businesses who have interests before the state to use this law firm, and then he personally benefited from it. That's the charge.
Is there a dollar figure with respect to the theft alleged from our tax coffers, from our education system and our healthcare system and the trains and buses and other things?
I have not seen that.
By extension, that the state collects tax money to provide. So no, because that would be what these companies in that part of the case were after, if I'm not mistaken, which is getting property tax reductions for themselves, correct?
Right, but that, in a way, the specific property tax reductions are done by the city, the ones that were going through him. But there, there's a renewal of laws that that allow for these kind of tax breaks, and the Speaker certainly has, power over those and when they're negotiating them. So we don't know specifically how much and if there was a theft, but he was using his office to benefit his personal bank account, according to prosecutors.
Chris in Garden City, you're on WNYC. Hello, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You're a lawyer?
Yes. So I just wanted to point out that I think the difference here with these charges and other previous cases, which have been more vague, is it's not just the issue of the referral fee. It's that he was using basically a slush fund that he controlled, to public money, of course, to pay a doctor to give him the referrals. That's a critical difference. He was paying the doctor with public money to send clients off for him, and then he would then get a referral on those clients. So there's a direct nexus between the use of public funds for his personal benefit. And that's, I think, an important distinction.
I hear you. That's
this case and others where it's sort of like, well, what's really a referral fee?
I hear you. So if the facts are as alleged by the U.S. attorney, you see this as clearly a case of bribery.
Sure. Stronger case, in my opinion, if he's paying a doctor with public money to send him clients. That's a direct quid pro quo.
Chris, thank you very much. So Ken Lovett, let's talk now about the reactions to this indictment of Governor Cuomo, Mayor de Blasio, and Sheldon Silver's rank and file, the Assembly Democrats. Here is Silver's second in command in the Assembly, Majority Leader Joe Morelli.
I'm continuing to support the Speaker, and I would say that the members overwhelmingly in the conversation that we just had are continuing their support.
Okay, kind of shrugged it off. And here is Mayor de Blasio, whose strongest ally on progressive legislation in Albany is Sheldon Silver.
Allegations are allegations, charges are charges, and there has to be a process to determine the outcome. I think separately, it's a true statement. He's done a lot for New York City, and I value that, certainly.
So Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief for the Daily News, is it fair to say Silver's political allies are being very slow to break ranks here?
Absolutely. We've seen criticism from Republicans. We've seen criticism from Democrats, mostly who are not in his house. But, he still wields a lot of power. And the reality is there's no true heir apparent. There's no one knows. A bunch of people said to me they're afraid of the chaos heading into a really high-stakes budget negotiation. They're afraid of the chaos that would ensue if you have a leadership fight right now, a leadership fight that would divide the conference, and then having a novice speaker having to go in and negotiate a really tough budget with the governor and the Senate.
Here's a question from Vic in Putnam County. Vic, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Thank you, Brian, for taking my call. Sheldon Silver has catered to what they call real estate interests and also been central to ending property tax reform in New York State that affects millions of people of modest means to shield mostly New York City developers and has kept real property tax reform from changing from our homes to income. And I'd like if you could speak to that betrayal for a moment.
Ken, obviously Vic has an opinion. What about the facts behind what he says?
Well, I mean, the reality is the Assembly Democrats, led by the Speaker, have always really been the roadblock to property tax changes. They did agree to the governor's 2% cap on local property tax increases. That mainly affects upstate. But certainly, it's a conference dominated by New York City interests, led by the Speaker, and they have typically been more interested in rent regulation issues. You know, to say that the Speaker is bent over backwards for the developers would be a little misleading as well, because, you know, this is a guy who has fought on the issue of rent regulations. And when George Pataki was a Republican governor and the Senate was controlled by the Republicans, it was really Silver and his conference who stopped them from getting rid of the rent regulations once and for all. I know a lot of the advocates say that Silver hasn't gone to bat enough against Cuomo, and you know they're upset with the deregulation that has expanded in the last couple of years. But the reality is, without the Assembly Democrats, it would have been far worse. So I'm not sure I'd say he's in the pocket of the developers, but certainly there's a relationship there.
Don in Cedar Grove, you're on WNYC. Hi, Don.
Hi, Brian. I just wanted to comment that it was I was reading the Times today that said that the day before the arrest, Cuomo was announcing to the world that Sheldon Silver would be joining him on international trade missions and jokingly showed a picture of himself to Sheldon as two of three amigos. And it seemed extraordinary to me that Preet Bharara wouldn't, at least through back channels, have reached out to the governor to let him know for the potential of embarrassment that would be occurring within 24 hours. And I think it may speak to a real distance between the two, or even a greater distance than any people ever estimated before.
Oh, that's a really interesting question. Right. The Three Amigos refers to this trip that Cuomo is going to take to Cuba now that President Obama is opening Cuba, and among the other two that Cuomo was going to take with him to try to expand, you know, business between New York State and Cuba was going to be Sheldon Silver as of one day before this indictment. So how about the question that Don raises? What would be the general protocol in a case like this? Would a U.S. attorney give a governor a heads up?
Well, I'm not sure on a normal situation whether they would give the governor a heads up, but certainly in this situation, let's not forget that the U.S. Attorney's Office, Preet Bharara's office, is looking into Governor Cuomo and his administration for their handling of whether they improperly interfered with the Anti-Corruption Commission, the Moreland Commission that the governor had set up, and they're also looking into the details surrounding the circumstances surrounding the pulling of the plug of the commission that led to a lot of the investigations that Bharara is doing now. So I'm not sure he was going to give the governor any heads up. There's also a belief that Bharara just doesn't like Cuomo. I mean, you know, a lot of coincidence or not, that's for people to decide, I guess. But a lot of these issues that he's done, these arrests he's announced or other things, have always seemed to step on something the governor was doing. In other words, you know, here he announces Sheldon Silver's arrest on the day after the governor put out his budget and was hoping to get some traction on that. He announced a bunch of arrests a couple of years ago after the budget was enacted and the governor was about to do a fly around to present it. You know, and even last year during the campaign, the governor, the one and only gubernatorial debate, on that day, the U.S. attorney, there was an interview with him in which he was critical of Albany and Cuomo's opponent used it later that night to attack the governor. So, you know, whether it's a personal thing or not, it does seem that some of these things are timed around the governor's schedule.
So an underlying issue. Was Governor Cuomo serious about ending this kind of corruption with his Moreland Commission on Corruption last year, which he seemed to shut down just as it was digging up some real dirt? Now, here is Cuomo defending that decision as he was being interviewed on tape by the Daily News editorial board.
If anything, it vindicates what happened. Because remember what happened to Moreland. Moreland sent out subpoenas for the outside income on both the Assembly and the Senate side. The Assembly and the Senate side joined together, brought a legal motion to quash the subpoenas. And they had the subpoenas quashed for months, and everything was at a standstill. And the lower court held the subpoenas. Moreland said, fine, forget this, because it'll go on forever, that court case. And by the way, if the court case got to the Court of Appeals, what do you think would have happened? But forget this, we'll refer the cases to prosecutors and let them use their subpoena authority, which is exactly what happened.
Okay.
On the same trip. So Preet got some cases, they sent some cases to someone else, and those prosecutors used their subpoenas, and their subpoenas were not quashed. The theory of quashing the Moreland subpoenas was that it was a political investigation, and they questioned the legal basis of Moreland, which was a complicated legal story. So Moreland said, rather than sit in court and do nothing, we'll give the cases to prosecutors, let them use their subpoenas, which is just what happened.
Governor Cuomo yesterday to the Daily News editorial board saying this indictment of Sheldon Silver by the U.S. attorney vindicates the shutting down of the Moreland Commission because they were hitting legal dead ends on their subpoenas. So now the actual prosecutors were able to pick it up. Ken, were you as Albany bureau chief in on that Daily News editorial board meeting with the governor?
I was.
What'd you think about that answer?
How to best put it? I think it was a rosy scenario at best. I don't think that's what the plan was. I think if you talk to people on the panel itself, they would have liked to have continued to do their work and develop these cases and then referred it to, if need be, to the prosecutors. But in this case, the governor cut a deal. Look, you know, there's a lot of people who believe that the governor never intended this to get out of hand, that he never intended the Moreland Commission to actually do, you know, a host, you know, to go after the lawmakers, that he wanted to use it as a cudgel to beat them into some kind of ethics package because there had been a number of arrests of lawmakers. So what he was doing is he was talking tough publicly, and behind the scenes he kept saying, I'm keeping him at bay, give me what I need and I'll pull the plug. And then, you know, certainly when, and we reported this a bunch, you know, certainly when they started looking into some interests that were tied to the governor, they shut that down, the administration, and that's something Preparara has been looking into. So I just think it became this mess that he couldn't control anymore. And once it got out of control, he decided to cut bait, and he just decided to get what he could get and move on. But, you know, Preparara took it seriously. And, you know, he asked for all the files, and now he's going to finish the work that the commission started.
All right, let's do one more clip from your meeting with the governor yesterday. You guys also asked the governor if he has any new plans for ethics reform this year in light of what happened, and he refers to something in his own new book.
I put forth a proposal, which is in the book, on a pay commission. The legislators want to raise. They haven't had a raise in 16 years. It also stops the executive from doing raises because they're linked. So the legislators haven't gotten a raise, the executive hasn't gotten a raise. But I said we should have a pay commission. If they want a raise, then limit and disclose all outside income, which is directly apropos this. But, you know, we have part-time legislators, and we revel in the fact that they're part-time legislators and they're not a full-time legislature. I understand the theory, On the other hand, you create this problem. You're a part-time legislator. What are you doing the other part-time? I'm out there making money. Well, how are you making money that it's not a conflict? And I said I'll favor the pay commission, but total disclosure outside sources revealed and prohibited. But it's just bad all across the board.
Governor Cuomo to the Daily News editorial board in a recorded interview yesterday. So the underlying issue there, Ken Lovett, Daily News Albany bureau chief, more salary for more disclosure. That's very related to the Silver case, isn't it?
It is, and if you look what he wants to do, he wants to cap outside income to a certain level. He hasn't said what that level would be. The commission he wants to put would negotiate that or recommend that, but he wants a cap outside income. He wants to have more disclosure of clients that's directly related to the Silver case and others. So there are a lot of lawmakers who are lawyers, including the Senate GOP leader, Dean Skelos, but that's something he really wants to do, and or he says he wants to do, and if they want a pay raise, they're going to have to go along with it. Now, as of early last week, when we first reported that that was his plan, a lot of the people in the legislature just dismissed it and said, well, it's a poison pill. He doesn't want to do it. But now you got to wonder with the Silver arrest whether he's going to get traction for some of these ideas.
U.S. Attorney Barrara, before you go, suggested yesterday that other indictments are yet to come. Any indication who or what, and could it, in any scenario, include Cuomo himself? Any indication Barrara thinks Cuomo illegally meddled with an independent commission, that Moreland Commission, as some have alleged, or shut it down even in order to cover up a crime for Sheldon Silver or anyone else?
Could it include the governor or his people? Yeah, it could include it. They're looking into it. I would be surprised. I mean, you know, certainly what went down with the Moreland Commission was unseemly, but I'm not quite sure it raises, you know, to the level of a federal crime. But you never know. I don't know what evidence he has. I don't know what he's dug up. But, you know, from what we know, I would be surprised if it actually got to the governor. But I would expect that you'll see more lawmaker arrests, you know, based on some of the stuff that the Moreland was looking into.
Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief for the Daily News, thank you so much.
Anytime. Be well.
And now, will Sheldon Silver's possible demise after 20 years as Assembly Speaker make Albany any better at democracy? I mentioned earlier that we now have online a one-minute movie in the style of an elementary school diorama explaining the Albany governing cliche, three men in a room. Here is the audio. This is just my voice, 1 minute, from that movie. With the indictment of Sheldon Silver, you're probably hearing the phrase, three men in a room. What does it mean? Three people, so far they've all been men, control almost all the power in New York state government. That's the governor, Andrew Cuomo, the Senate Majority Leader, Dean Skelos, and the Speaker of the Assembly, who's been Democrat Sheldon Silver since 1994. There are 150 Assembly members, 62 senators, but they rarely hold public hearings. Almost all the decisions get made by the three men in the room, and then almost all the lawmakers go along. Why are they so passive? Well, in order to know the three men in the room, you have to know Lulu. That's Lulu, which is short for a payment to a legislator in lieu of reimbursement for actual expenses. The Senate Majority Leader and the Assembly Speaker authorize Lulus to most of their members, so the rank and file have little incentive to rock the boat, and the three men in the room get to keep making all the decisions. Many other states have reformed systems like this. New York, not so much. And again, that was the soundtrack from our one-minute movie diorama, Three Men in a Room. You can see it and share it with all your diorama-loving friends from our Twitter, Facebook, or WNYC.org pages. And joining us now is former state senator Seymour Lachman, who published a book just a few years ago called Three Men in a Room, The Inside Story of Power and Betrayal in an American Statehouse. Mr. Lachman, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure to be on your program again.
First question, how different is New York from other states? Is power less concentrated in the governor and the legislative leaders elsewhere than it is here?
It varies in the 50 states, but New York's record is not a shining example of what democracy is all about. And with your permission, I'd like to, for about a minute or two, speak about what I would like to, and that is the heart of a democratic system.
Absolutely. That's why you're here.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. Winston Churchill once said that democracy is the best form of government except for all the other alternatives. How does one interpret that? It interprets that by saying it's not the most important thing to have the subways run on time as scheduled. The most important thing equal to that is probably how it is done. This is a democratic system in Albany that's dysfunctional. How do we change that system to become functional, which would involve all people in the state? This is not a democratic issue or a Republican issue in terms of the objectives we want to achieve. But it should be not only a bipartisan objective that we are seeking, and it's more than a bipartisan objective for society, and that is how does a democracy achieve its goals?
So how does the three men in the room system, that is the concentration of power in the leaders of the legislature as opposed to more dispersed through the rank and file, thwart democracy in a way that it affects the people?
What's democracy? Because people's opinions are not expressed. The leadership basically controls what is going on in Albany. In my five terms in the state Senate, no bill was ever passed without the support of either the speaker in one house and the majority leader in the other house. That is not how we seek to achieve, in order to achieve a democratic system, in order to achieve the goals we want and we think is necessary.
Can you explain Lulu's more than I did in the video? I read that almost every state senator, almost everyone, and two-thirds of assembly members get these extra paychecks for what are supposed to be leadership positions. Is that true in your experience, and what's that all about?
It's true in my experience. It's partially due to the low salaries legislators have as a theoretically part-time body.
Wait, can I stop you there? Because we threw out this number yesterday to the listeners, and they couldn't believe that a lot of folks in the system, like yourself, call this low. They make $80,000 a year to be part-time legislators. The session only runs from the beginning of January till about April 1st in a concentrated way before the budget, and then they still are in session, but they go back and forth to their districts more, I think, until the end of June. So at best, they're working 6 months out of the year as legislators, making $80,000 a year plus these Lulus, and then they have the opportunity to earn outside income
you
under the law.
You are absolutely correct. In fact, New York is the third state in salaries for part-time legislators after California and Pennsylvania. But I want to go, further than that in terms of saying that democracy is enhanced and improved if the how is as well as the goals are achieved that people want to achieve. I'm very concerned about these goals, not only as a Democrat, but as a resident of New York State. But I'm also concerned about the fact that people aren't involved who should be involved, and that is the masses of voters who sometimes get results that they want, but at the same time, the how it's achieved is not recognized as being detrimental to the very fiber of a democratic society.
I understand. But getting back to the Lulus, does it work that because the leaders of the Senate and the Assembly, Sheldon Silver in the Assembly, can distribute these Lulus, these extra payments on top of the basic salary, that since this is considered a relatively low income by the legislators themselves, that that is central to keeping them in line and seeing that there is none of the independent debate, independent expression of opinion by members of the Assembly and the Senate that you were deriding before and lamenting before?
Absolutely correct. It is major. I view this as a major issue that is also a major problem. It keeps the legislative members attached to the leadership in such a way that sometimes they're not voting their conscience. Very quickly, when I first entered the Senate and saw that the reality of the democratic process in the state is not what I taught as a professor of government, and I'm still teaching at Wagner College, where I also direct the Carey Institute for Government Reform. I discovered something inadvertently. One day, one of the leaders came over to me and said, here's a $1,000 check from one of the people who have been close to us. What you only have to do is vote our way, which is the way that this group wants in terms to get its desired objective and goal. Then I decided a week or two later that what they desired is not good for the people in the state. And the list leader came, and I voted against it, unlike most of my colleagues who voted for it. And the leader said to me, you just ruined your chances of ever becoming, you know, part of the leadership.
Uh-huh.
How
so
could
it's,
you do this?
So it's carrots and sticks. The Lulus
it's
on the one hand.
Carrots and sticks, exactly. It's the Lulus, and it's bringing money into the district. I mean, I was asked by the former majority leader of the New York State Senate if I'd like to have my member items increase from $139,000 to $2 million. That would be distributed in a safe district. And I said, what would the cost be? And he said, you would have to vote for me as majority leader.
So real quid pro quos. So your phone line is deteriorating. Our connection is deteriorating. And we're going to end this in a minute.
I'm sorry.
But it's not.
I cannot do this.
That's okay. It's not a surprise, based on the story you just told, that so many members of the Assembly, despite the apparent seriousness of these charges, are not calling for Sheldon Silver to step down as Speaker, as, for example, the New York Times editorial page did today. What do you think? Given the charges that the U.S. attorney has brought forward here, should Sheldon Silver resign either as Speaker or as a member of the legislature altogether?
I think it's a wonderful opportunity to bring reform to Albany and open up the democratic process. And I ask Mr. Silver to be the lead in this. There cannot be a functioning government that should function the way it is and achieve the goals it desires if this continues to fester on. If the Speaker would open up the powers that he has and share it with other people until the results are in from the trial, since a man is basically innocent until proven guilty, how this would open up by bringing more people into the process. It would not just be 213 legislators. It would not just be the leadership. Now, it might be messy at first, but a democracy can be messy in order to achieve its objectives without losing its soul. And I think this can be done. And I think Mr. Silver can go along with this while the trial is proceeding.
Interesting. Seymour Lachman, 20 years a New York State senator, and author of the book, Three Men in a Room, The Inside Story of Power and Betrayal in an American Statehouse. Thank you so much.
Okay.
And again, listeners, if you want to see my one-minute diorama movie about Three Men in a Room and that system in Albany, you can check it out on any of our pages, WNYC.org, or Twitter, or Facebook. And before Sheldon Silver got arrested, the big story coming out of Albany was Governor Cuomo's State of the State address, especially his education reform proposals aimed squarely at the teachers union. So we will talk about that with our education reporter, Beth Fertig, right after this.